Hello, this is Mike Fitch, and welcome back to Life Coaching in association with Project Phoenix Life Coaching. I appreciate you joining me for my most recent episode. Today, I want to talk about needs and compassion. So I want you to ask yourself if your family, your partner, or any of your loved ones expressed a need to you, would you do all that you could to help fulfill that need? My guess is that you would. I'll go ahead and make that assumption. So then I want you to ask yourself, if you have a need, what do you do with that? Is there a hesitancy when you have a need? Where does that hesitancy arise from when you consider expressing your need? Are you afraid of being rejected, having your needs ignored or potentially even ridiculed? Are you afraid of seeming needy or too much? Or do you even know how to express or identify what your need is? Maybe you simply don't acknowledge your needs. Maybe you have a long-standing tradition of ignoring your own needs. Do you suppress them? Do you repress them? Do you pretend that you don't have any needs or wants? And if you do that, why do you think that is? Ask yourself that. Why do I not feel comfortable asking for what I need? Is it because you don't want to be a burden? Or is it about perception? Do you want to seem strong and independent, and asking for what you need seems weak? Or, again, is it so that you guarantee that you don't rely on anybody else in this life except yourself? You have found through trials and tribulations that you are the only person that you can count on. If that's the case, that's probably a really lonely way to go through life. And just so you know, it is not selfish to have needs. In fact, it's quite the opposite, which I'll get into in more detail. It is about mutuality. If you want the other people in your life, partner, family, loved ones, to express what they need so that you can help fulfill those needs. Doesn't that feel good? Somebody needs something, you step up, help fulfill that. If you want that, then you owe it to them to meet them in that process. You owe it to them to turn towards them, not only by being receptive and open and curious about their needs, but by familiarizing yourself with your own needs and allowing yourself to be authentic and vulnerable and open by then verbalizing your needs to them. Because oddly enough, those needs will never be met if people don't know what the hell they are. I'm sure many of you are reacting to this with significant trepidation. You may literally feel it physically in your body somewhere as a negative reaction. Some tightness or discomfort you feel maybe in your throat, your chest, your stomach, maybe across your shoulders. I encourage you to feel into that, to sit with it quietly and see if you can figure out where that feeling is coming from. Is it talking to you? Is it trying to tell you something? Why does your body respond that way to the idea of expressing your needs? Why do you get a visceral response to that idea? My body does it. Expressing what I need is a very unnatural process for me for a lot of the reasons that I identified previously. But I have made significant progress lately. After I figured out why it is so hard for me to do and how selfish it was for me not to willingly express it to those in my life, which was a difficult concept for me to understand until it kind of slapped me in the face. If you really investigate why you have a negative reaction to the idea of expressing your needs, I think you will find that it is most likely an investment in certainty, which can look a lot of different ways. But it relates to the solo self, which is a theory that I just recently heard promoted by Dan Siegel. Traumas cause us to bunker up. We become focused on our own survival. We won't be let down by anyone again because we will rely solely on ourselves to eliminate any of that potential risk. Something happened that eroded our trust in others. We were hurt, we were rejected, we were abandoned. Any number of things. So by God, we will not be doing that again. Your cortex seeks out certainty so that we can reliably predict what is going to happen next, which, as a natural outcome, causes us to eliminate other unpredictable humans from our sphere of reliance. So we're always trying to live a step ahead of that anticipatory moment of disappointment. In turn, we embrace separation instead of inclusion. We become very focused on threats and who we should allow in and who we should keep out. If we eliminate all risk, then we will be safe. So we internalize everything and create this certainty by only relying on ourselves to fulfill our needs, which is actually quite impossible. We are a collective species. We are a social species. We rely on others to help us achieve our full selves. So part of expressing your needs is breaking through those walls and barriers that we have all erected in response to negative experiences and letting other people in. It's risky. I know. I understand that. I completely get it. I'm in no way minimizing the traumas that you experienced that led to this approach. They're all valid. They're also not serving you. We have all done it. And it's a survival mechanism that helps us feel safe. But I challenge you to step into the fear and bravely open yourself to the potential. There will be risk, but the potential rewards can absolutely not be accomplished alone. They cannot be accomplished in solitude. If you think of life like a pendulum swing, when we operate out of fear and separation and in-group versus out-group, our pendulum has a very small back and forth motion. Minimal. No big swings, very little risk, and with that, very little reward. As we open up, expand our willingness to connect outside of ourselves, our pendulum starts to take bigger, more robust swings. It gains momentum and sets us on a more rewarding path. Understanding that there is risk involved because it does not simply swing one way. It goes back and forth. Thus, the greater the risk, the greater the reward. But the beauty of life hinges significantly on experiences. And that pendulum swing is a direct representation of what our experiences could potentially look like. And the only way for that to occur is for our pendulum to swing big. Relying on others will also help ease our nervous system. Think of the strain we put on our own nervous system when we rely solely on ourselves to meet all of our needs. When we perceive everything as a threat, we are in this constant state of fight, flight, freeze, or faint. And it is exhausting. When you feel like everything, it gets on your last nerve, when you can feel your nervous system frayed at the edges, your emotions frayed at the edges, we need to be able to develop the ability to distinguish between legitimate threats to our well-being and perceived threats. Instead of lumping them all together, we can start to see perceived threats as challenges, potentially even opportunities, something to be curious about and explored and potentially overcome or embraced to allow ourselves to expand and grow and evolve instead of hiding from everything because we don't want to be hurt again. When we wake up, we can ask ourselves what opportunity is presenting itself today. Regardless of good, bad, positive, negative, we don't necessarily need those labels. Life is going to offer us something today. What's it going to be? And I guarantee you, if it's painful or if it's difficult, then it's an opportunity for growth. And we can either turn into that opportunity for growth and walk right into it and see what that offers us and see how we can expand and evolve, or we can turn away from it and stay right where we are. And that's fine. No judgment. Depends on what you want your path to be. Depends on what kind of pendulum swing you want. When we expand the notion of self to include those people and things around us, then we create a culture of inclusion and it facilitates us achieving our higher selves, because we can't achieve nearly as much individually as we can collectively. We just can't. Because we are more than just our solo body. Now back to your needs. I'm going to say something you may not agree with. In fact, I've said it previously. But I will say that it is selfish to not express your needs. And if you'd told me that a few months ago, I would have thought you were nuts. Expressing my needs sounds extremely selfish. Why do I have to rely on somebody else to fulfill my needs? Why can't I just handle this myself? I don't want to be a burden. I don't want to seem needy. I don't want to put anybody out. How are people going to like me if I'm constantly asking for things? I'm sure most of us are under the impression that asking for things is selfish. Expressing wants, needs, and desires is akin to being greedy. But, I argue, to not turn towards your loved ones, to continually make them guess, to not give them the opportunity to fulfill your needs, just like you want to do for them, is actually more selfish than actually just asking for what you want and what you need. You owe it to them to give them a chance to say yes. You don't know how they'll reply. You don't have any idea how they'll respond. So don't answer for them. They don't want to guess. It's exhausting to not know what a loved one needs. But it's also important to understand that they might not be able to do that for you at that moment in time. They might be maxed out. They might be at capacity. And they might say, you know what? I would love to engage on this. I would love to help you with this. This is something that I really want to do with you or for you. But can it wait a little bit? Can it wait until tomorrow? And you have to be okay with that. You have to be okay with that. You could potentially think of yourself as a teammate. Expressing your needs is a huge part of being a good teammate, a good partner, because that is a symbol of you reaching out and creating a collective mindset and culture, that idea of mutuality that I mentioned earlier. It's a fact that it's easier to let yourself down than it is to let others down. When you think that your actions might let down people that you care about, there's a higher degree of accountability than if you just might let yourself down. Challenging yourself to be a good teammate, challenge yourself to be open, is part of the mutuality of any healthy relationship. It creates interconnectedness. This is all mutually beneficial. It helps you to avoid operating out of isolation. Doing your own work, asking for what you need, relying on those you love as much as they rely on you is holding up your end as a teammate. Interesting to think that asking for what you need is actually an unselfish gesture. Meeting your loved ones halfway requires you to be extremely vulnerable and authentic enough to say, I need space. I need a hug. I need some quality time. I need some intimacy. I need to vent. Whatever it is. If you don't do those things, you're not turning towards them. You are not practicing mutuality, and you are requiring them to shoulder more than their fair share of the emotional heavy lifting in your relationship. They have to constantly seek out information from you about what you need or what you want or what you're feeling, and that is exhausting. And eventually it will stop. You don't want them tired and worn out. You don't want them to give up. You don't want them to quit turning towards you. You want them energized, which is extremely exactly what can happen when you create that connection through vulnerable and authentic communication to give them insight into who you are and what you need. Plus, if you don't make it a habit of expressing your needs, your needs, ironically enough, will seldom be met, and you will risk becoming resentful, and it will, I promise you, it will manifest itself within your relationship in unhealthy ways. I was really good about not asking for what I wanted and then turning into a martyr because I never got what I wanted. My partner never gave me what I wanted. Well, how the hell were they supposed to do that if I never asked for it and let them know what it was? But it fed my martyr complex, right? Ooh, if I hold this back and bear this all by myself, then I'm taking one for the team, right? I get to be a martyr. Look how strong I am. I'm not asking anything of anyone, when in actuality, that is extremely selfish. Give them the chance to say yes or no. Do not make assumptions. Don't answer for them. Don't avoid asking because you think they are too busy or too stressed or too distracted because you don't have any idea. And that is just you spinning a narrative that will keep you safe from a perceived threat of rejection. That's a lot of what if right there instead of what is. You don't know what they'll say. So don't forebode joy. Don't forebode that experience by assuming the worst and not even giving them a chance to meet you halfway and turn towards you. Express your needs without being attached to outcomes. You have to be okay if they can or cannot meet you in that need. Your request will prove beneficial regardless of the outcome because you expressed your need and you've given them a chance to turn towards you. A lot of people don't want to seem needy. Men avoid being needy because it seems weak. Women avoid being needy because it makes them too much. So then they don't end up asking for what they need. There's a difference between having needs and being needy. Everyone has needs. Expressing them is healthy. This is a nasty trick that society plays, and I can speak from the male perspective. Society asks us to be stable and strong and sturdy and above emotion and needs. And yet we are also constantly prodded to be open and vulnerable, be more authentic. And this proves very challenging for most men to balance. Well, which of these am I supposed to be? How do I prioritize this? I'll give you some insight as to the difference between being needy and having needs, and maybe this will help. Being needy is when you require your loved ones to carry your emotional weight for you. You take no ownership over your own emotional and spiritual well-being. You need saved. That's being needy. Having needs is you doing your own work, turning inward, figuring out exactly what it is you need and why, and then taking those well-defined, thoroughly examined needs to your loved ones with confidence and certainty and being able to articulate them because you have asked yourself the hard questions and have a deeper understanding of who you are. Don't make them do the work for you. Give them the opportunity to support you in that process, and they will gladly do so. A big part of being able to identify your needs is showing yourself compassion and being kind to yourself. Realizing that it's acceptable to have and express needs. Give yourself permission. Treat yourself as you would treat a really good friend. Think about it this way. If your best friend was telling you their problems, their issues, their needs, their fears, how would you respond? Would you be kind, compassionate, understanding? So, now, here's an opportunity for you to respond to your own needs in a similar way. You don't have to be your own biggest critic. There are plenty of people that will do that for you. You don't have to hold yourself more accountable than you hold anyone else. Instead of beating yourself up using negative self-talk to be overly critical of yourself, try being kind. Think of the impact it could have if you were your biggest ally. Think of the impact it could have if you were your biggest fan. Along with self-compassion, I challenge you to try showing other people compassion as well. And I associate this with accepting people right where they are. Going into it, realizing that everyone is doing or did the best that they can or the best that they could. In thinking about your upbringing, understanding that no one is perfect as a parent, as children, we had no idea what our parents were dealing with while trying to raise us. We all end up with issues and shadows and traumas from our parents. It's unavoidable, absolutely unavoidable. Part of healing said traumas is extending compassion to those responsible for rearing you. There's a good chance we have no idea what generational trauma our parental units inherited or experienced in their formative years. They were doing the best they could, period. It is our job to deal with our stuff so as to stop the cycle and not pass it on unintentionally to future generations, i.e. our children. Be kind. Show compassion. Perhaps setting unreasonable expectations is a family trait passed on for generations. Maybe being emotionally unavailable has survived for three generations, brought on by some severe emotional trauma, and it's up to you to purge that from your lineage. Maybe your grandma lost her mother at a young age and was raised by a father who didn't know how to connect emotionally with a young child. So she, in turn, could not give the love your mother needed. So on and so forth until someone breaks the cycle. Adults don't want to, and absolutely shouldn't, burden their children with their traumas, inherited or otherwise. So we may never know unless we ask. And short of asking, we can still lovingly offer up extensive compassion as a tremendous step in healing. Maybe your absentee father had such a poor self-image of himself or felt so guilty for his actions that ended your parents' marriage that it was just easier for him to just disappear and be out of sight, out of mind, rather than constantly reminded of his mistakes as a father and a parent. He might have convinced himself that the kids were better off without him. My dad died before I could get a chance to ask him why he was non-existent in my life. But my sincere belief is that the pain of dealing with the reality and consequences of his actions were too painful to deal with. So he took the path of least resistance, and it was just easier to go away. And then he decided to drink himself to death. I extend my compassion to him. That must have been extremely hard and extremely painful. He chose not to deal with his stuff, whatever it was. I have no idea what his upbringing was like, what traumas he inherited that influenced his decisions. He chose to wallow in what was familiar and comfortable and hide from his truth in the bottom of a bottle. And that was his choice. I don't judge him for that. I didn't have to live his life. I have no idea what he went through. And it's my responsibility to deal with the trauma and the shadows that are left in me. Otherwise, I'll pass them on to my own kids. And that's the last thing that I want to do. Until we know the whole story, we should simply extend compassion. Heal wounds by realizing that harboring ill will is good for no one and accomplishes nothing. Operating from a perspective of revenge, negativity, and resentment sets us up for a continuation of those very sentiments. And that's an ugly, vicious cycle. I challenge you to shift the narrative. Be compassionate with yourself. Be compassionate with others. Look inside and figure out what you need and communicate that with your loved ones, understanding that it is an unselfish act to do so. Thank you for listening. I greatly appreciate it. This is Mike Fitch with life coaching and project